It's too bad that some of the young people that were killed didn't have guns attached to their hip, you know, where bullets could have flown in the opposite direction.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a great idea, Mr. Trump.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in sweltering Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on 90.7 FM in LA. In Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cottage Grove. In Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM in Columbus. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And of course, coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, Detour Talk in East Tennessee, Radio Monterey, and Blanketing Planet Earth. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik. You can run, but you can't hide from the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Though, don't take my word for it, because I'm kind of loopy from the heap. Yes, the first day of summer is coming in like a lion, with temperatures out here in Southern California and in Arizona reaching 120 degrees in some places. Desi Doyen, 120 degrees in some places.
Yes, multiple records broken. Is an understatement.
Yes, and broken is an shattered over the weekend in Phoenix and in parts of Los Angeles out here. I know it's been very hot elsewhere around the country of late. Following May 2016, the hottest May ever recorded on planet Earth, which followed April as the hottest, and
March is the hottest,
February,
and so on and so forth, going back for 13 months, yes.
Yeah, you know what? If only someone had warned everyone about this this sort of thing coming. Well, and actually, of course, we have. And you have, Desi Doyen, with eight years of the Green News Report, trying to let people know what was going on, what was coming, so that we could do something about it. We could at least try to do something about it. A number of people have already died over the weekend, thanks to this heat wave out here in the Southwest. But at least those people weren't killed by ISIS, because then we'd actually have to do something about it in this country, or at least pretend that we were going to do something about it. Or you know, if you're the U.S. Senate, if you're Republicans, then you can just simply not do anything about any of it, period, because that's what they do. Now, the U.S. Senate is set to vote on Monday on a number of amendments related to keeping people who are on the terrorist watch list and the no-fly list from being able to easily and legally purchase weapons of mass destruction at gun shows and in stores and online. So there's actually going to be a vote, and that is all thanks to Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy. And last week, his 15-hour-long filibuster, which successfully ended with a promise from the GOP leadership in the Senate to even hold these votes at all. These votes on really the lowest possible hanging fruit legislation. Closing the background check loopholes at gun shows and for online purchases. And restrictions on the purchases of weapons by suspected terrorists and terrorist sympathizers. The fact that we have to have a debate about whether we should disallow suspected terrorists And people who have, you know, vowed their sympathy to extremist organizations from being able to buy guns is rather remarkable. I suspect people, we have a lot of listenership around the world. I suspect people are hearing this and thinking that that's crazy. You mean people who have been suspected of being terrorists, people who have been interviewed multiple times by the FBI for showing sympathy to the Islamic State and to Al-Qaeda, that those people are allowed to walk into a gun store and in a matter of minutes buy any weapon they like? Yeah, that's how it works here in these United States of America. And that's how it worked, actually, for the shooter behind the Orlando massacre, who had been interviewed some three times concerning his expressed statements of support for ISIS. Now, early betting has these measures in the U.S. Senate that are being put forward by both Democrats and Republicans alike, that they are both, all of these measures, frankly, the betting is that they are set to fail in the U.S. Senate, even in the wake of those the Orlando shootings. Thanks in no small part, I would say thanks entirely, frankly, to the stranglehold that the terrorist-enabling NRA, the National Rifle Association, has on the entirety right now of the Republican Party. So it's unlikely, at least according to the pundits, who are always wrong, so we'll see, but it's unlikely that these measures will pass in the U.S. Senate. Either way, even if any of these measures were to pass by some quirk of reason and some quirk of compromise in the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives, in the meantime, in which Republicans have even more control, which means the NRA has even more control in that U.S. House, they have no gun safety measures at all, even on the docket. And they're unlikely to, unless the members of Congress on the Republican side suddenly feel that their majority could be threatened, that they could start losing elections for failing to take action yet again. Despite the massive majorities of voters, a majority of voters, both on the Democratic and Republican side, who strongly support these low-hanging fruit, common-sense measures that are in the U.S. Senate right now, coming up for a vote. In the meantime, you remember Bernie Sanders last week as he gave an online address to his supporters. He talked about a lot of things. He did not concede the race to Hillary Clinton, at least not yet. He says he wants to unify, at least to take on Donald Trump, but that he's going to stay and try to effect change within the Democratic Party. Well, one of the ways that he pointed out to effect change in the Democratic Party, and frankly, not just in the Democratic Party, but in government across the board, from top to bottom, whether it's the Congress, on down to the state level, down to the local level, to change the policies in this country, the way that we, you know, move forward or don't in this country. When we're looking at what's going on in the U.S. Congress with guns, you got to scratch your head and you have to say, why are these people? Why do these Republicans, who won't even do these most common sense measures, why is it that they remain in power? Why the hell aren't they voted out? Well, in many cases, it's because the Democratic Party hasn't even put up people to run against them in Congress and in state races and in local races and so forth. Bernie Sanders spoke about that to his supporters in that address he gave last week. And Des, I want to play just a part of that.
Here is a cold, hard fact that must be addressed. Since 2009, some 900 legislative seats have been lost to Republicans in state after state throughout this country. In fact, the Republican Party now controls 31 state legislatures and controls both the governor's mansions and state houses in 23 states. That is unacceptable. We need to start engaging at the local and state level in an unprecedented way. Hundreds of thousands of volunteers helped us make political history during this last year. These are people deeply concerned about the future of our country and about their own communities. Now we need many of them to start running for school boards, city councils, county commissions, state legislatures, and governorships. State and local governments make enormously important decisions, and we cannot allow right-wing Republicans to increasingly control them.
That was Bernie Sanders speaking with supporters last week about the necessity of engaging at the local and state level in an unprecedented way to run for office, to not just vote, as too many progressives do not do, particularly in off-year elections, but actually to run for office. Now, you had Howard Dean years ago had his 50-state strategy. He was trying to get people to run for office in Congress in all 50 states instead of Democrats rolling over and saying, oh, it's not worth it for us to compete in Utah or in Kansas or in the Deep South.
We can't compete there, so we're going to give up in advance.
Well, exactly.
Is essentially what they were saying.
Which is what they were doing. Howard Dean was trying to change that, and then Barack Obama came in, got rid of Howard Dean, and that 50-state strategy went away.
But it was very successful at the time that it was tried.
Well, it was successful for that short period of time, but a lot of that also had to do with the disaster that was the George W. Bush presidency, in my opinion. Although, yes, you're absolutely right, Des. It did bring in, it brought majorities back to both the House and the Senate for the Democrats. It brought them the White House. But the idea that what Bernie Sanders was talking about is you know, changing his campaign into a movement from the bottom up. And that's what he was calling for in his address last week. I've always thought that was a great idea. You can look at the Tea Party and how they have, frankly, taken over the entirety of government from local level on up to the, at least to the U.S. Congress.
Republicans control 31 state legislatures now.
As he said, yeah, 31 state legislatures and both the governor's mansion and the legislature in 23 states. This all happened while Barack Obama was in there with his supposedly progressive policies and the hope and the change and all of that. In the meantime, while that was going on, Republicans were taking over left and right. Well, some good news. Less than 24 hours after Sanders called on his supporters to run for office at the local and state level, nearly 6,700 people signed up at BernieSanders.com/win to learn more. That came from a press release from the Sanders campaign. They say in total, almost 11,000 supporters expressed interest in running for office or volunteering for other Sanders supporters who do run for office. 11,000 people, and that was within 24 hours. Sanders has called that response extraordinary. I'm sure it's been much higher since the weekend. I haven't gone back there to check. But he says, I have no doubt that with the energy and enthusiasm of our campaign has shown that we can win significant numbers of state and local elections if people are prepared to become involved, and that this will be part of transforming our country from the bottom up. So, you know, this is could be potentially huge. 6,700 supporters expressing interest in running. They say that covers 51% of state House districts, 69% of state Senate districts, and every congressional district in the country. And that was just hours after Sanders has given his speech. So I'm putting this in as a marker as we move forward to see how, and if things change here when it comes to running for office, when it comes to progressives running for office, we may begin to see a sea change based on the Bernie Sanders campaign. We'll find out. Speaking of the Bernie Sanders campaign and his supporters, I received this email over the weekend. From Susan S. She writes to me, you can do the same. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. She says, Brad, I'm saddened to hear you join mainstream media's somewhat misleading rush to call Hillary the winner, when in fact, right now, she does not have enough delegates to automatically win the nomination, and there is becoming a push, like in Maine, for delegates to be only proportioned by voters, and even some superdelegates in California, I understand, flipped for Bernie. Now, she's got more here. I'll get to it in a second, but I just want to say I have never called Hillary Clinton the winner. I've called her the presumptive winner. And I did so only after all the voters had finished voting. Yes, they are still counting votes, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. But she does appear to be the presumptive nominee. And, you know, I get you. If you think I'm joining the mainstream media that I was so critical of, for example, Associated Press, for declaring her the presumptive winner before tens of millions of voters had even gone to the polls out here in California, not to mention Montana and New Jersey and New Mexico and South Dakota and North Dakota and Washington, D.C. If that's what you heard from me, you heard it wrong. Or maybe I said it wrong, but I don't remember saying it that way. She goes on to say, Susan S. goes on to say, plus over a million California's vote ballots still need to be counted. And in the ones that that have been counted since the night of the primary, three counties have flipped for Bernie. And that includes nine superdelegates switched to Bernie. Now, yes, three counties have flipped since election night to Bernie Sanders, now that they're counting all the provisional ballots and the late vote by mail ballots that came in. Her comment about nine superdelegates switching to Bernie, I don't think so. I'm not familiar with that. Maybe she means pledged delegates that would have otherwise gone to Hillary Clinton have now moved back over to Bernie Sanders since those particular counties have flipped as they continue to count the votes. And there are more than a million votes in California that are still being processed and will be continued to be processed over the next several weeks. The state has until January 8th. July. The heat's getting to all of us. Till July 8th to certify the election. So that is continuing. There's no question about it. I don't know that any superdelegates have switched their support from Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders that I know of. But that comes from Susan S. To me at bradcast@bradblog.com. And she also included a note that she sent to Bernie Sanders campaign manager Jeff Weaver. She's angry that Bernie even met with Hillary Clinton. And she says that she lives in California and she saw so many people who are upset with what happened here on Election Day. She says, we absolutely need a major investigation of these primaries. She wrote to Jeff Weaver, what does it say if we won't stand up to challenge what happened in these primaries? She disagrees with meeting with Hillary. She describes her blatant lying. Yeah, she is kind of a liar. And her voter suppression. Now, voter suppression? Really? Okay. I haven't seen any of that voter suppression, at least not by Hillary Clinton, at least not by the DNC, at least any actual evidence of voter suppression. Now, I know that Susan and a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are not happy with the way that things worked out. And it's true, there was disasters all over the country when it came to voting this year. And yes, California still could flip. It still could flip entirely over to Bernie Sanders with those subsequent million votes that are still out there. But for now, short of flipping it, and by the way, flipping it in a very big way, a big, big way, like more than 80% for Bernie Sanders, short of that, Hillary Clinton is still the presumptive nominee. We presume that she will be nominated. Things could change. Obviously, things could change in California. She could be, as Bernie Sanders like to say, indicted, which I should add is unbelievably unlikely from my reading of where that case is. But yeah, all of that could happen. Donald Trump, who is the presumptive GOP nominee. He could also be somehow unseated from this. Things could change. There's talk about that happening on the Republican side. But he is, in the meantime, the presumptive nominee. Now, for those who are charging fraud out here in great big capital letters in California, here's some good news for you. If you think that things went wrong here in California, that somebody, Hillary Clinton, the DNC, somebody else stole the election in California, and the results that we're seeing are not accurate, that somehow somebody is actually flipping votes, not counting them correctly, flipping them on the tabulators, here's the good news. You can find out. If you're a California voter, any California voter can actually ask to recount any jurisdiction, any county, any precinct that they like. You can file for a hand count here in California, a public, transparent hand count. You can raise the money for it to count, to hand count every ballot in the state if you want. So for those people who are out there screaming, yelling and screaming about fraud and that the election was stolen and it was stolen out here in California, well, the good news is California law allows you to find out if you want to. It's going to cost you some money because you will have to pay for that count if the results don't end up the results of the hand count don't end up flipping the existing results. But yes, that can be done. So you know what? Bernie Sanders supporters and journalists alike, by the way, and a lot of journalists out there who I like, who I respect, who I've interviewed on the show, who I've covered for years, who are now out there yelling and screaming about fraud, that Hillary Clinton has stolen the election, that California is a we should wrap yellow tape around the state of California as a crime scene. I haven't seen that that evidence of California as a crime scene. But the good news is we can find out. You can count any state, any county you like, any jurisdiction you like. You get to name it out here in California. So you can file for that count. Now, I agree with the concerns about the results that we've seen not only here in California and elsewhere, but I, you know, the people that I have seen shouting fraud, I've been covering this stuff for more than a decade. And I can tell you, and this is exactly what I've been warning about. I've been warning about people, you know, elections, an election system that is not transparent, that people cannot oversee, that are counted by computers, and not just the touchscreen voting systems, but even the paper ballot systems. When they're run through a computer, they're counted either accurately or not. Nobody knows unless we bother to count those paper ballots, which we don't out here in California, at least not above and beyond this 1% post-election spot check that we have to do by law out here in California. But those post-election spot checks are of a tiny number of ballots. They can easily be gamed. So yes, I understand. I agree with the concerns. I've been warning about these concerns. I've been warning how, you know, even if an election, even if every single ballot in California is counted accurately, the fact that the voters don't know that it was counted accurately because they make it so difficult for people to know if it was counted accurately, that in and of itself is a grave threat to our democracy. So I agree with the concerns, but I disagree with the conclusions that are being just tossed around so cavalierly out there in explanation of numbers that some voters don't agree with. I understand the concern in and of itself, but the concerns are not actual proof that the election was stolen by fraud or stolen at all. The exit poll disparity with results that we have seen in so many states that so many Sanders supporters are citing, even if true, even if the exit polls showed one thing, which, by the way, there are no unadjusted exit polls out there. There are no unadjusted exit polls out there. The raw data, the raw unadjusted data is not made available by the exit poll companies that are paid for by these mainstream corporate media. So anyone who says, oh, the unadjusted exit poll data doesn't match with the final results, they're kind of lying to you because they haven't seen the unadjusted data. They haven't seen the raw data. I would love that data to be released to the public, but it has not been. In any event, those people who are telling you there's a disparity with the results, that is a sign that the election was stolen, well, maybe. It could also simply be error because we have terrible voting systems that are wrong all the time because we don't bother to count and find out if they're right. And by the way, even if it was theft as opposed to error either by the pollsters or by the voting machines, even if it was theft as opposed to error, there's no evidence at all to support the assertion that either Hillary Clinton or the DNC did it, as these people are charging. There's no evidence that anybody did it at this time, to be frank. And even if you think something was done to steal the election, you have no evidence of who did it. So, you know, on this program, Before everybody starts running around and saying, oh, he's a Hillary, he's a Hillbot. We have looked at each of the concerns as they have happened, state after state after state in this country during the presidential primary cycle, going back for months. We looked at the Wisconsin and the North Carolina and the Florida, the huge lines to vote, thanks to photo ID and electronic poll books that failed in those states. We looked at the New York purge of 126,000 voters in Brooklyn alone who were purged from the rolls. Were they Bernie voters? No evidence of that whatsoever. Hillary Clinton actually won in Brooklyn. So they, you know, when they purged 126,000 voters in Brooklyn, it may have hurt Hillary Clinton more than it hurt Bernie Sanders. Is that evidence that Hillary Clinton stole the election? Or that the DNC stole the election? The hours-long lines in Phoenix, in Maricopa County, during the Arizona primary. That happened after a Republican registrar there shut down hundreds of polling places, leading to huge lines, leading to, and a lot of the polling places were no longer in the Hispanic areas of town, and Hispanic voters have tended to support Hillary Clinton. So had those voters been able to vote, had it been easier for them to vote, there's no reason to believe that, again, Hillary Clinton might not have done even better than she did do. And the outrageous behavior of the DNC throughout the entire process, including after the Nevada State Democratic Convention, where they accused Bernie Sanders supporters, where they lied about Bernie Sanders supporters, saying they were throwing chairs and that they were violent. I have condemned all of that. I continue to condemn it, and I continue to look at it and to look at the myriad reports of problems faced by voters out here in California. And there were a lot, and it was shameful. In truth, so far, while I have seen a lot of these nightmares for voters, in truth, they haven't yet been any worse than what I've seen in previous election years. Now, that's not a compliment, because we have a disastrous election system in this country. But what we've seen this year, to those of us who look at this stuff closely, is really, in truth, no worse and arguably even better than I have seen in recent elections. Now, I've also said that it takes a lot of time to figure out what actually happened in any particular elections, and that problems, the full extent of the problems, don't come out until many days, weeks, months, and even years afterwards. So I continue to try to figure out what the hell went on in this election, what the hell went on out here in California, with reports of people finding themselves not able, no longer registered to vote, or at least not registered with the party they thought they were registered with, or being told that they had signed up for vote-by-mail ballots when they believed that they did not. This is going to take a while. And we're going to have to see what actually happened here and figure this out. But so many of the people, again, it's one thing for just, you know, rank and file supporters of a candidate to yell and scream that the election was stolen from them when the results don't come out the way they like, or when they see all kinds of irregularities. But it's another thing when we see people who are theoretically professional at this, folks in the media, again, folks who I like, out there misinforming, misleading voters, saying that the election was a crime scene, that you know, that Hillary Clinton stole it, that the DNC stole it. Maybe she did. Maybe they did. But right now, we don't know that. We have no evidence to support that. That's a damn serious charge. And if you're going to charge that someone has stolen an election, you damn well better have the evidence to back it up. Seen things over the weekend, this Stanford paper. It's not a paper. It's a student at Stanford who put together a report on looking at some of these exit poll numbers. One of the things that they found was that Bernie Sanders, did better where there was a paper trail for the votes, and that Hillary Clinton won where there was no paper trail. Well, that is actually true. That's largely true. Why might that have been the case? Well, larger, more urban jurisdictions tend to use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems that have no paper trail. Larger, more urban jurisdictions tend to have more minority voters, like African Americans and Hispanics, who tended to favor Hillary in big numbers this primary cycle, for good or bad, for right or wrong. So it doesn't make any. So it does make sense that she would win in areas without a paper trail, because that's where the places without a paper trail have more of the voters who tended to support Hillary Clinton. In and of itself, that evidence doesn't tell us anything about whether an election was stolen or not, as the argument goes. It just means that the evidence is, frankly, pretty thin gruel at this point. And again, even if it was stolen in those areas, there's zero evidence, zero to my knowledge, that it was stolen by Hillary Clinton, that she was the one doing the stealing, as all of these reports seem to charge. So, the fact is, we can't know if the results are accurate. And that is a huge problem. And I'm delighted that people are finally noticing that part of the problem. That has been my point here for more than a decade. At bradblog.com and here on the Bradcast. Yes, results can be flipped. They can be flipped in 30 seconds time on computer tabulators, both in places that have those so-called paper trails and those that don't, because we don't actually bother to count actual ballots in this country. And yes, I have spoken with exit pollsters all throughout this cycle and in cycles before. The exit pollsters, they always think that they, not the results that are reported, we're wrong. I think that's kind of weird that the exit pollsters are always finding reasons why they got it wrong, and they never question the actual results. Are the results right? And if you talk to them, they just see the results as the gold standard, period. It is impossible for there to be election fraud. There is impossible for there to be election error. Which is just ridiculous. You can go to bradblog.com and you can read all kinds of stories that, impossible results in Monroe County, Arkansas from a couple of years ago, where numbers went backwards and state officials still can't explain it. I can point you to what happened in Palm Beach County, Florida, back in, I believe it was 2012, when the optical scan paper ballot computers completely mistallied a number of races, announcing a number of losing candidates to be the winners. And had that not been caught by a very good election official down there, those people who did not win the election likely would have been sworn into office. So, yes, you're right to be suspicious about all of this. And this is a difficult needle for me to thread in speaking to this at all, because I don't want to dissuade anybody from being skeptical about election results. You should be skeptical. You should continue investigating. You should keep trying to oversee your own elections so that you can know that they have been tallied as per the voters' intent. And right now in 50 states, that's damn near impossible to do. So I'm delighted that folks are finally beginning to see the problem that I've been warning about for years. This is it. This is the problem. The loss of confidence in our system of representative democracy. And that's true even if there is no fraud, because we can't oversee it. We can't know. Even if the results are accurate, we need to be able to know that there are. And with the systems that we used, we can't do it. That's it. Period. We can't. There are ways to find out, to try at least and find out, which is why I note California and the excellent law allowing any elector to ask for a hand count. Even if the law is terrible, it allows county registrars to set arbitrary and capricious rates for that counting. We've talked about that on the show before. We have to fix that law. But at least there's a route. At least there's a way in. At least there's a way to find out how the people actually voted in the state of California, at least, even if not all of the other states around the country. But to those, especially the election integrity folks out there, many of whom I respect, I have worked with for years, to go out and shout fraud without evidence to support that claim of fraud, I believe it's terribly irresponsible, and I believe it makes it really goddamn hard for those of us who are really trying to investigate this stuff and believe that a serious allegation should only be made with serious evidence to support it. And that when stuff hits the fan this November, there's going to be a lot of folks out there who were yelling and screaming about fraud before who are going to be completely dismissed by the media and by election officials and everybody else. And again, I guess I need to underscore, no love for Hillary Clinton here. I've long said it. I think Bernie would be is certainly much better on policy. I think he'd be a much better candidate to run against Donald Trump. I'd far prefer to see that. But election integrity has nothing to do with who you or I or anybody else likes as a candidate. That's why I've gone to bat for candidates, at least for the supporters of the of candidates who I abhor, But even those voters deserve to have their results counted accurately in a way that they can know that it has been counted accurately. So I take hell from everybody when I fight for voters and democracy. Took all kinds of hell from the Hillary camp in 2008 when my reporting resulted in Dennis Kucinich filing for at least a partial hand count in the 2008 New Hampshire primary. So no love for Hillary Clinton, but I do have love for democracy. And I do hope that people educate themselves about this system rather than yell and scream about fraud and stolen elections, for which they have no evidence in support right now. I want to keep the investigation going, but we need to do it responsibly. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is the Bradcast. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thank you for allowing me to get that off my chest.
Man, you had a lot to say there.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of important, especially leading up to the November election when this is going to be all these same problems times a bazillion.
Yep. And I'm sure I'll have more to say about it in the days, weeks, and months ahead. But I had to get that off my chest. Thank you for allowing me to do so. If you'd like to yell at me for doing so or have any disagreements or agreements, whatever you like, I'm Bradcast at bradblog.com. Feel free to let me know. You can also tweet me and find me on the Facebook at the Brad Blog. Okay, moving on to some other issues, maybe moving back to some issues here. The Supreme Court on Monday has rejected a couple of cases that were challenging assault weapons bans in Connecticut and in New York in the aftermath of the shooting in Orlando, Florida that left 50 people dead, according to the AP. The Supreme Court justices on Monday left in place a lower court ruling that had upheld laws that were passed in response to the Newtown, Connecticut shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School involving a semi-automatic weapon. And the states, Connecticut and New York, voted to put certain restrictions, certain bans on those semi-automatic assault weapons. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that those bans can stand, even though lower court rulings, well, the lower court rulings had upheld those bans. The evenly split U.S. Supreme Court at this point, the 4-4 court, now that Antonin Scalia is dead, said, yeah, we're not going to hear those cases. So that means the lower and had they heard them and they tied, then the lower court rulings would have stood in any case. That means that, yes, states, at least as of now, can decide what types of weapons that residents can or cannot buy. In case you had any question about that, in case you thought that this was the Second Amendment didn't allow any restrictions on any weapons whatsoever, that is not true. Now, the Supreme Court has repeatedly turned away challenges to other gun restrictions since a couple of landmark decisions from the Supreme Court spelled out the right to a handgun to defend one's own home. That was the Heller decision. And by the way, I'd point you over to bradblog.com. Our legal analyst, Ernest A. Canning, wrote some, well, let's call it encouraging words about what could happen in the future with the U.S. Supreme Court now that people are starting to understand the National Rifle Association's scam misinforming the public that, the Second Amendment is inviolate. You cannot possibly put any restrictions on any weapons whatsoever. That's complete and utter nonsense. And, more cases, I suspect, will get to the U.S. Supreme Court. But for now, those bans against assault weapons in at least New York and Connecticut will stand, as they will in other states who are looking at this and say, okay, yeah, I guess we can go ahead and ban these military-grade weapons, or at least make them more difficult for people to buy. In the meantime, was this last week? It feels like months ago. Donald Trump, following the Orlando shooting, had come out and said, well, the real problem was we don't have enough guns. That it's too bad that all of those kids at that club didn't have their own guns. Then they could have fired back and everything would have been fine. Now he is walking that back. Now he is saying, he tweeted today, quote, when I said that if within the Orlando club you had some people with guns, I was obviously talking about additional guards or employees. That's what he tweeted. That is actually not what he said. Here is what he said right after the shooting on the Howie Carr show on this very point.
I mean, it's too bad that some of the young people that were killed over the weekend didn't have guns, attached to their hip.
Yeah.
Frankly, and where bullets could have flown in the opposite direction, Howie, it would have been a much different deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded like there were no guns. They had a security guard. Other than that, there were no guns in the room. Had people been able to fire back, it would have been a much different outcome.
Uh-huh. So young people, too bad they didn't have guns strapped to their hips. It would have been a much different outcome. Yeah, the different outcome is more people probably would have been shot and killed. So when Donald Trump comes back and says, well, when I said that if within the Orlando club you had people with guns, I was obviously talking about additional guards or employees. No, he was not.
Except for that part where he explicitly said those people, those young people who were killed, that's pronouns mean things.
Mm-hmm. And he had repeated that same suggestion, by the way, at a number of rallies across the country last week in Atlanta. For example, he said that the carnage would have been lessened if some, quote, again, the direct quote, some of those great people that were in that club that night had guns strapped to their waist or strapped to their ankles. So, he's a pathological liar is what he is. Nothing new there, I guess. But I guess it needs to be repeated because the guy is, yes, the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party for president of the United States. Even the NRA now seems to be disagreeing, sort of, kind of. They're somewhat inscrutable themselves, but sort of, kind of disagreeing with Donald Trump, who they endorsed just a couple of weeks ago, just before the Orlando massacre. Chris Cox, the NRA's chief lobbyist, was on ABC This Week and saying that what Donald Trump said defies common sense, though he wasn't completely clear about that, as he did seem to suggest that he would like to see more people with guns in such situations.
But do you want people late at night at a nightclub drinking?
Of course not. Of course not. And you can't be in a nightclub drinking anywhere in this country. What Donald Trump has said is what the American people know is common sense, that if somebody had been there to stop this faster, fewer people would have died. That's not controversial. That's common sense.
But you don't like the idea of people going into nightclubs armed to the teeth.
Of course, no one thinks that people should go into a nightclub drinking and carrying firearms. That defies common sense. It also defies
Trump
the
does.
Law. It's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah, that is what we're talking about here. That's exactly what Donald Trump was talking about here. Now, Trump met supposedly with the NRA a few days ago because Trump thinks that we should not allow people to buy guns if they appear on the no-fly list or on the terror watch list. So maybe they got their story together. Maybe they said, okay, well, what we're talking about, yeah, we should have more guns in there, but not guns by club goers. We just need more guards. We need more people, more guns to stop all the people with guns. God forbid we should stop the people from getting those guns. We need more. I mean, it's like, yes, people are getting poisoned out there. And the problem is not the poison. The problem is not enough people have the antidote. That's what they seem to be suggesting there. And then when they talk about, you know, federal laws, all of these federal law, we can't, you know, the feds are coming in and stopping this and that. And they want to take away your guns. Well, I'll tell you what. Good thing the federal government is on this, because did you see what the Des? I don't know if you saw this. The Florida Assistant State Attorney General. What this Florida State Assistant Attorney General, he was suspended on Friday. In Florida, mind you, the guy who a prosecutor who would be in theory part of taking on the you know, guys like the Orlando shooter and prosecuting what happened there. That Florida Assistant State Attorney General, he was suspended on Friday for calling calling the people in Orlando, the city of Orlando, a melting pot of third world miscreants and ghetto thugs.
Wow.
This, according to Orlando television station WESH, Kenneth Lewis is his name. He was suspended for violating the state attorney's office social media policy, according to a spokesman there. He wrote on his Facebook page, "Downtown Orlando has no bottom. The entire city should be leveled. It is void of a single redeeming quality. It is a melting pot of third world miscreants and ghetto thugs. It is void of culture. If you live down there, you do it at your own risk and at your own peril. If you go down there after dark, there is seriously something wrong with you." That's the prosecutor in Florida after the shooting in Orlando. Just absolutely mind-blowing. So, yeah, he's been suspended. That's good. But, yeah, I kind of, when it comes to, you know, stuff like this, I prefer to not just count on the, you know, whatever it is that the state and local officials want to do. If this is the idea of the state and local officials, I'm real damn glad there's a federal government overseeing it, at least trying to. Amazing to me. But, of course, with all the mixed messages out there, it's not a surprise. This comes from our friend John Amato posted this over at Crooks and Liars. The mixed messages out there. You heard from the National Rifle Association saying that there needs to be more guns, but of course not the people who are going into the bar to drink. Well, no wonder it's confusing. Here is Larry Pratt. Of what is he? Gun Owners of America, another gun lobbying group. He was on CNN with Carol Costello over the weekend, and here's how this conversation played out.
Neither party is addressing the gorilla in the room, which is all of our mass murders, save two, since 1950, have been in gun-free zones, just like the one in Orlando. They're not talking. The Republican leadership,
now, wait a minute.
I think,
in Orlando,
is to be faulted.
Just to you know, a minor quibble here, but there was an armed guard inside that bar the night that terrorists opened fire, so that wasn't
sure
a gun-free zone.
Sure there was. No, yes, it was, because he was the only one. State law prohibited anybody else from having a gun, and so they were all unarmed. Once the dirtbag shot his way past the guard, it was open season on helpless victims, and that's the problem with gun-free zones. They are safety only in the minds of those politicians who think mm-hmm. it's a good idea, but they don't work, and they have failed for decades.
Well, it was a gun-free zone because it was a bar, and when people drink, the state of Florida probably doesn't think it's a very good idea to arm patrons.
Control
but that's
the amount
why.
Of booze you sell them, but don't make them sitting ducks. In a bar, yes. Oh, it might hurt
that's why
business.
You go to a bar.
Do you think a mass murder hurts business? That's what gun-free zones do.
So, what we do, we need to have less liquor and more guns in bars. That will solve it.
That's the solution.
Larry Pratt, the Gun Owners of America. I don't know if he's the president, he's the founder or whatever. And essentially CNN's Carol Costello there laughing in his face over this suggestion. That's what we've come to. That's what we've come to. Good news out here in California. We may have at least a bit of a solution. We may be able to turn at least one of the corners a little bit in the gun debate. We'll take a quick break and come back with that afterwards. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Over the break, we got word that one of the bills in the U.S. Senate to try to make it harder for folks on the terrorist watch list to buy weapons has now been held up. We'll, as I predicted, it wouldn't pass at all. We'll see what that's about from AP. I'm sure we'll have more on that tomorrow. In the meantime, last week, we spoke with Dr. Mark Rosenberg, who headed up the CDC's injury prevention unit back in the 90s. And we talked with Rosenberg about that moment back in 1996 when Republicans effectively stopped all funding of research into gun violence. And how that, how long ago was that? 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, 20 years ago. 1996.
And it still stands right now. The federal government does literally no scientific research into the causes for gun violence, into how to stop it, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now, as of late last week, California has taken up the at least a little bit of the gap. They have allocated $5 million to establish the California Firearm Violence Research Center. That will fund and train a new crop of researchers and get one of the best violence data sets out there, according to Wired. Garen Wintemute, a physician and the director of the Violence Prevention Research Unit at UC Davis, said that over the last 15 years, national rates of firearm violence have remained unchanged, but that in that same time period, firearm violence here in California has decreased by about 20%, and nobody knows why. Is it the gun laws that we have in place here in California? Is it our fantastic economy, which is doing great? We're now the sixth largest economy in the world if California was its own country. Understanding what has gone well or badly in California will apply to the rest of the United States, they say, but it obviously won't be enough to solve America's gun problems. Federal funding drives the public health research agenda, and $5 million is barely a pellet of birdshot, as Wired describes it, compared to the ammunition that feds deploy on other scientific problems. And yet, still, Wintemute and Lois Wolk, the Democrat who represents Davis, California, and sponsored this legislation, they think that this will any clarity that we can bring to the conversation is a step in the right direction. She says until the government comes to their senses, the federal government, the problem is so large and serious that everyone should have a shared policy conversation. Research will help us move in a direction that establishes common ground. Good science and access to information ought to be principles any side of the gun issue can agree on, says Wired. Well, yeah, you would think, but you know what? We've got a lot of good science on, just to bring everything back to where we started this blazing hot show today, where we've got a lot of good science, climate change, global warming. But even with that good science, somehow Republicans have figured out how to completely ignore it. So even if we do get science, even if we do get good science concerning guns, there is no promise that it still won't be ignored unless you can remove the people who are ignoring it in the first place, which also brings us back to where we started concerning Bernie Sanders and concerning getting and why elections matter and getting better candidates in there.
And getting involved on the policies at the local, state, national level, all of that.
But all of that. But as we swelter out here right now in Los Angeles, and the heat will be breaking soon, I'm sure, right?
I hope.
Right?
Yes.
As we swelter, Jimmy Kimmel a few weeks ago had his own response that they put together for the, what's the name of his show?
The Jimmy Kimmel Show?
Okay. The Jimmy Kimmel Show, a response that they put together back when Donald Trump was out there busy calling climate change a hoax. And by the way, we know that he knows it's not a hoax because he signed onto an advertisement back in 2009 begging legislators to do something about climate change. So he's now just pretending it's a hoax. It's a hoax that he says it's a hoax. Nonetheless, what he said was, oh, it's a hoax because it's a money-making thing that all of these scientists are out there getting rich on climate change science somehow. Never mind the fossil fuel companies, the most profitable companies in the history of civilization. It's somehow these academics, these scientists who are making out big time over climate change research. Here was the response that Jimmy Kimmel put together in response to that nonsense.
Hi, I'm Aradhana Tripathi. I'm a paleoclimatologist and isotope geochemist.
Hi, I'm Alex Hall, and I'm a climate scientist.
I'm Jeremy Pell, and I'm a hydroclimatologist.
I'm Nina Karnofsky, and I'm a polar ecologist.
I'm Chuck Taylor, and I'm an environmental analytical chemist.
I'm John Dorsey. I'm a marine environmental scientist.
Over the past 40 years, thousands of scientists have studied climate change.
Definitely happening.
And it's caused by human beings.
That's you and me.
And the consequences could be extremely dire.
Catastrophic.
Apocalyptic.
And here's the thing. When we tell you all this, we're not with you.
We're not with you.
Definitely not with you.
Why would we with you?
Think about it.
If I wanted to screw with people, do you think I would have gone into climate science?
If we were with you, I'm sure we could do a lot better than anthropogenic climate change.
I'd probably tell you that a meteor was coming and then try to sell you a helmet.
We know about this stuff.
We have PhDs.
In science.
This is not a prank.
This is not a prank.
Once when I was younger, I locked one of my buddies in a porta potty, then pushed it over. Now that's a prank.
So just to sum up,
global warming, real.
It's real.
Man-made.
Caused by carbon pollution.
Temperatures soaring.
Oceans rising.
Ice melting.
For real. We're not with you.
We're not with you.
We're not with you.
Believe us, if not for our generation, then for his.
You motherfuckers better not this up.
Paid for by people who know more than we do.
Oh, go find that kid. I think we just found a new guest host for the broadcast. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It really does mean a great deal. Thank you. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it at bradblog.com. It is free as ever. It's also free over at iTunes, where we hope you'll subscribe and have it downloaded automatically to your iPhone or your computer. And while you're there, give us a good review. It helps other people find us as well. If you'd like to not give us a good review, feel free to send me email. My email address, bradcast@bradblog.com. You can also find me on the Twitters and the Facebooks at TheBradBlog. All right, that's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.